Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Tuesday, June 17, 2014. In Iraq, it's...
You invite me to a war party. Me no wanna go. Everybody seems to be inviting me to a war party. Me no wanna go. Heard about the last one, so thanks, but no thank you, ho.
No thank you, says Eddie Grant.
You killed off all the Indians and you killed off all the slaves, but not quite so you kill off the remains. Y'all look for me, I'm looking for you. I can't believe what they say about you is true, that you're a bastard just like Pharaoh. You killed the children just like Pharaoh. Now you send a ticket for me. It don't have RSVP. Oh Lord, it's a war party. Me no wanna go.
The grotesque ethnic score settling is underway big time now in Iraq. The latest sign, 44 Sunni prisoners were executed by Shiites, apparently in police uniforms, and this occurred at a police station in Bakuba, north of Baghdad. Also, separately, the bodies of four young men who had been shot were found dumped on a street in a Baghdad neighborhood controlled by Shiite militiamen. So, it started, of course, with the Sunni insurgents moving south, and the Shiite-controlled government in Baghdad, with the Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani calling all Shiite men to arms. And now, it is just open warfare in portions of Iraq. And the idea that the U.S. can enter this fray in any meaningful way and come out without simply aiding and abetting the Shiite cleansing of the Sunni population is very hard to see. And so we have a situation where the U.S. is in talks with Iran. And most of this, of course, is around the nuclear negotiations in Vienna. But it's very clear that that is the connective point where the U.S. is in delicate discussions with the Iranians. But I do not envy President Obama, the military, or the national security team, because almost any little step you take is into a landmine of one sort or another. And the idea that we can enter this picture, stop the conflict, and then what? Obama has announced we're sending 275 troops back to Iraq, and most of them are already there. And we're told about 175 of them are for embassy security and protection of American citizens. And the other 100 or so are to train Iraqis. Now, are we going to train these newly formed militia groups? These people who have no training and they just show up with guns, patrolling a neighborhood? I mean, it's irrational and incoherent to imagine that there is an American solution of any kind to the conflict. Now, I realize that we bear responsibility for unleashing these forces. And I take that significantly. I, of course, blame Bush and Cheney and the neocons who are now advocating that we get involved again in Iraq. But that responsibility does not include a permanent occupation of Iraq in order to keep the warring parties apart. And I don't know what it will take to move the Maliki government, despite the demands of the United States and Iran. We're told that Maliki spends all his time organizing Shiites and fighting a civil war. And despite the demands from Tehran and Washington that he include Sunnis in a meaningful way in the government, also reach out to the Kurds, Maliki's having none of it. And so as long as he is in power, and he's our boy, we've got to recognize that. It appears to be a stalemate situation where he is content to absorb casualties and kill Sunnis with some, you know, grandiose scheme that one side will be able to eliminate the other. The Shiites have numerical superiority over the Sunnis, but the Sunnis were in power under Saddam Hussein. They have resources, particularly from Saudi Arabia. And so this is turning into a regional conflict that could expand to a world war. And I hope that Obama retains a very cool head and doesn't succumb to the demands of the right-wing hawks in this country to do something just so he can say he did something. And I know that he has a temptation to try to mollify the right-wing critics. But if he gives them an inch, then they will just hammer him further. And of course, it's inconceivable that Obama would in any way approve large numbers of U.S. troops deployed on the ground in Iraq. But as I said yesterday, the idea that air power will suffice, that doesn't make much sense either. So it's going to be a thorny situation for some time to come. As I mentioned yesterday, I will be taking a little vacation starting next week. I'll be away for 2 weeks. And I expect that things will continue to spiral downward and out of control. We'll see what the American response continues to be. Well, Obama can claim another scalp to, again, try to quiet the restive Republicans who just can say Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi until you want to puke. It's been announced that over the weekend, without consultation with Congress, the United States apprehended Ahmed Abu Qatala, who has been identified as a suspect for some time now in the attack on our facility in Benghazi on September 11th of 2012, I'm sorry. Now, this guy Qatala has been hiding in plain sight. He, you know, has been kind of daring the U.S. to pick him up. And for whatever reason, the administration, according to the New York Times, held back in part for fear that an American raid might further destabilize the Libyan government, which barely is stable. So we can't really, at this point, understand. There also is a report that this guy Hifter, General Hifter, who used to live down the road from Langley in Virginia before he went back to Libya after Gaddafi was killed, that Hifter may have been planning to kill Qatala, and so the U.S. grabbed him in advance of that. Now, the good news is he's not going to Guantanamo. We're told he's going to be held near Washington, D.C., and tried in a civilian court. And, of course, I don't know the extent to which there is compelling evidence that has brought his arrest and transfer to the United States. I have two stories about Guantanamo today. Yesterday, there was a hearing in front of the judge in the case of the alleged 9/11 conspirators led by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. His name is Colonel James Pohl of the Army. And as you may know, there's been a controversy raging for several weeks now about potential misconduct by the FBI. The allegation is that at least four members of defense teams, none of them lawyers, have been questioned by the FBI starting in January 2013 related to two separate investigations. And the investigations seem, you know, insignificant, but the fact that the FBI made contact with defense staff members has led the defense to believe that they've been penetrated. David Nevin, lead lawyer for KSM, I feel that I'm under scrutiny. I'm trimming my sails. I'm being extremely careful about how I proceed. Yes, there is a chilling effect when you think the FBI has infiltrated investigators or other members of your legal team. So in the hearing yesterday, they brought out a man named Campo Amor Sanchez. And he was appointed by the judge as a special investigator to take a look at this. And he is siding with the prosecution and essentially is inferring that the defense is trumping this up. He said, no, there is not any informant or mole in the defense camp. And so, you know, at this point, I have no further evidence to push this case in one direction or the other. But the whole routine at Guantanamo is such a bad kangaroo court. And the idea that we can have credible convictions come from a process where defense attorneys believe that their conversations with clients are being monitored, where evidence is withheld by the government, where hearsay evidence that may have been extracted from other prisoners via torture is going to be admissible. There's no way that this set of proceedings will ever live up to close scrutiny. And it's sad to see them bending over backwards and bending all the rules to try to produce a process that they think will have some credibility. I frankly don't see it. The other case from Guantanamo is a follow-up on our recent conversation with attorney John Eisenberg. He's part of the legal team representing a man named Diab, Abu Wael Diab. And Diab has been on a hunger strike. We talked about his case. He was cleared for release back in 2009, but no release has been forthcoming. So he goes on a hunger strike. They force feed him. And the attorneys have been working with Judge Gladys Kessler in District Court for the District of Columbia, who at one point ordered the staff at Guantanamo to stop the force feeding. But she then canceled that, dissolved that order, and told them to continue it because she thought he might die. In the meantime, she ordered the Defense Department to produce videos of the force feeding. And now it appears they've stopped videotaping force feeding, so they don't have to produce any more of those pesky videos. She also asked them to operate in a more humane fashion. Stop removing the tubes before and after, after each feeding so that they have to be painfully reinserted. And now the lawyers have filed for an emergency order because they say that the staff there refused to allow Diab to use a wheelchair to go from his cell to force feedings, and that they insist on the brutal forcible cell extraction team removing him. Then they force him to walk, and it sounds pretty barbaric is the best way I can describe it. So this legal struggle will continue, but here is an affidavit from a fellow prisoner. On June 9, they say Diab was subjected to a harsh force-feeding procedure so much that he had been beaten. He had blood in his feces. I heard him vomiting for much of the night, said a fellow prisoner. And the bottom line about all this was very articulately stated by John Eisenberg in our recent in-depth interview. President Obama could stop this with a phone call, with using that famous pen that he brags about when Congress gets in his way. The president could order changes in the force-feeding regimen, could order all kinds of accommodations of Judge Kessler's requests. And so far, we've seen absolutely nothing from the White House to stop this brutality that goes on every day at Guantanamo Bay. I want to thank the people who subscribe to my podcast here and make this possible, like Joey Perillo, Marianne Razzo, and I just got a check in the mail renewing for another year Chris Sheedy, who lives here in the Bay Area, and he thanked me for the grace period. His subscription had expired a couple of months ago, so he paid a little extra, prorated. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, one and all. I'd like you to join their ranks. I need more supporters to keep this whole podcast operation going. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. Follow the link that says sign up. It's right under my picture. That page gives you options, $5, $10, $20 a month. Our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. New annual subscribers in the U.S. get this rock and roll CD called Red Flag. It's by John Dist. And a bag of kick-ass Kona coffee beans supplied by Russ Archibald on the Big Island of Hawaii. Well, the equivalent of the NSA in Britain is called GCHQ, Government Communications Headquarters. And they issued a broad legal rationale for collecting information from Internet use by its citizens, he said. And the government has asserted the right to intercept communications that go through services like Facebook, Google, and Twitter that are based in the U.S. or other foreign nations, even if they are between people in Britain. The legal argument is that these are external communications and, as such, subject to interception even when no wrongdoing is suspected. Now, the laws are different in Britain, you probably know that. But I'm told by this news article that under British law, internal communication between people based in the country may be intercepted only when there is suspicion of illegal activity, as specified in a government-issued warrant overseen by the courts. That's pretty similar to our Fourth Amendment. But probably based on the badly modeled behavior of the NSA, GCHQ says they can grab anything they want. The United States Senate on Monday passed out an intelligence whistleblower bill, which is called the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act of 2012. And it does have some improvements. It does expand some whistleblower rights to the intelligence community. And that is progress, and, that's not all bad. And let's talk about the good parts of it, and then we'll talk about the weaknesses. The Senate reform includes protection for intelligence community government workers against retaliation banned by the Whistleblower Protection Act. Disclosures by whistleblowers would be protected when made within their agencies to the Office of Inspector General or to the select congressional intelligence committees. Equal protection for those exercising personnel rights or providing testimony. Appeal rights to an administrative board selected by the Director of National Intelligence. Now that keeps it right inside the bubble. And this is the biggest weakness that I see. Because if you try to go through channels, let's say you're Ed Snowden, and by the way, the language here does not explicitly apply to contractors, so that's a gray area to my reading of it. Anyway, you want to blow the whistle on something you think is illegal, and if you get fired or they take away your security clearance, you appeal it to the Director of National Intelligence, the liar-in-chief James Clapper. Would you feel confident in a proceeding like that? Well, I certainly wouldn't. And Tom Devine, who is the legal director at POGO, the Project on Government Oversight, and a controversial figure. You know, many of my whistleblower contacts feel that Tom Devine is in some ways an enabler of the crackdowns on whistleblowers, even as he works to defend them. And so I just want to acknowledge that he's not universally loved and respected in the whistleblower community. But he said this, "While a landmark first step, I couldn't in good conscience reassure any whistleblower that the new rights make it safe to work within the system." And he enumerated six or eight deficiencies in the bill. So a little bit of progress, but it won't change the big picture. And that is that today, whistleblowers are most likely to face draconian charges under the Espionage Act instead of any kind of legal protections for doing their duty. And let's face it, that's what 90% of whistleblowers do. They believe that something wrong has happened, and they want to make it right. If you see something, say something, they're told, and when they do, they get clobbered with retaliation. The Army has opened an investigation into the facts and circumstances surrounding the disappearance and capture of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl in Afghanistan. No surprise there. They named Major General Kenneth Dahl to head the investigation. And on this issue, I give the military credit. I think that they resisted the calls from the galleries to launch an investigation in a kind of haphazard or emotional way. And like everyone else, I wasn't there in Afghanistan when he was separated from his unit. We have Michael Hastings' account, which was published over 2 years ago, which is pretty damaging to the cause of Sergeant Bergdahl. But I wouldn't regard that as the last word, and we will await the Army's investigation. As we head toward the midterm elections in November, there are many concerns about the Republican efforts at voter suppression. 22 states have passed restrictive laws relegating certain voters to have to prove that they have the right to vote, or limiting the hours when polls are open, like in Ohio. And despite the efforts in those 22 states to find ways to limit access to the vote, the courts aren't going along with it. Opponents of these voting laws have been heartened by the successes of the past 6 months in places like Arkansas, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. But in Mississippi, they imposed a new photo voter ID law. And the election chief said that Mississippians came together and showed that we as a state could implement a voting requirement without federal intervention or oversight. Now, that's a loaded quote, because the federal intervention or oversight relates to the Supreme Court decision a year ago that negated the enforcement section of the Voting Rights Act that required states like Mississippi, with a long history of voting discrimination, to get pre-approval for any changes in their electoral process. And that's what the Mississippi registrar is talking about. And let's give him a name. It's Delbert Hoseman. Thank you, Delbert. Also in Wisconsin, a judge found that the state presented scant evidence of voter fraud to justify the strict photo ID law. And the judge has ruled the law would disproportionately affect blacks, Hispanics, and the poor, since they're least likely to have the required forms of government-issued ID. The judge found that 300,000 registered voters in Wisconsin, about 9%, lacked the ID required to cast a ballot. And roughly the same number is of people are affected by the new restrictions in North Carolina. And that 300,000 figure is often the margin of victory for Democrats when they occasionally win in that state. And finally, Harry Reid needs to be whacked upside the head with a 2x4. Now, that's figurative, okay? I don't promote violence, and I am not about to attack the Senate Majority Leader. Not physically, anyway. But verbally, yeah. Harry, what a stupid frickin' idea. Which idea? He wants to give tax-dodging American corporations like, say, Apple Computer amnesty by offering a tax holiday. For a short period of time, companies like Apple that have more than $150 billion technically stashed offshore, they would be able to repatriate that money, bring it back to the United States, and pay tax on just 15% of it. That's not a 15% tax rate either. 85% of that money would be exempt from taxation at any rate. It's a gift, a giveaway. And it would only reward the kind of schemes that Apple and other companies use to pretend to funnel money through Ireland or Belgium or somewhere else, expressly to avoid taxes in the United States. Now, Harry Reid is desperate for money. He wants to grab a couple of billion dollars from this and put it into the Highway Trust Fund. Now, Harry, I'd like to see more money in the Highway Trust Fund, and the way to do that is to honestly raise the gasoline tax and to peg it to a percentage of the price paid, not per gallon. Those are easy fixes that would raise a lot of money. But for God's sake, don't declare amnesty for the most profligate tax evaders that we've ever seen in the United States. So, y'all, thanks for listening and putting up with my ranting and raving. You're invited to share this podcast with absolutely everyone, and I hope you will. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.